British comedian John Cleese has kept several generations of people laughing. There's something kind of ageless about his humor, from the Monty Python sketches like The Ministry of Silly Walks and The Cheese Shop, to his unforgettable role as the neurotic hotel manager in Fawlty Towers. Well, now Cleese has finally written an autobiography, looking back over his career. It's called So Anyway, and Doug Gordon loved it.
John, why did you decide to write your autobiography at this particular point in your life?
It started about 15 years ago, and I was having lunch with Michael Caine. He'd just written his, and he was going on about what a delightful experience it was. And I said, well, what was so special about it? He said, you start reclaiming parts of your life that were completely lost. And I thought, that is marvelous. I want that experience. I like writing that because it's so dignified. You can start when you want to and finish when you want to. You just have to hand it in on an agreed date. I started about 2 years ago. Took altogether about 2 years to do it, and it's the most enjoyable thing I've done for a very, very long time.
That's great to hear, and that comes across. It's a very enjoyable thing to read. So,
excuse me asking this, but genuinely, what is enjoyable to you?
Your life is very interesting.
Oh, you see, you think that. I don't think it's very interesting when I compare it with people who've been in wars and spies and people who've discovered rivers in Africa. It seems a bit tame, but I suppose it's pretty interesting compared with most people who spend their lives going into an office, yeah.
Well, yeah, and plus you discovered and invented a new kind of comedy.
Okay, I see what you mean. I ask you, see, because when I'm in front of an audience, I can tell what they like and what they think is funny because they laugh or they don't laugh, and I can note all that. But when you write a book, you sort of, it's a bit like contacting planets in the solar system. You sort of send out a signal, i.e. the book, and then you sit there and remarkably little feedback comes back.
You say that you sometimes suspect that what you seem to laugh at more are the things that frighten you.
Well, yes, I have absolutely no proof of this because it would be impossible, I think, to construct experiments. But when I began to look at what I laughed at, I realized that a lot of the sketches that I wrote with Graham Chapman were about people arguing. Mm-hmm. Not just the argument sketch itself, but a lot of the other, there was a sort of frustration of people not being able to understand each other. And then I realized that a lot of the humor in Fawlty Towers is me and Manuel not being able to understand each other. And I think that one of my fears was that I didn't really communicate emotionally with my mother. There was no real empathy between us. So I think that that must have been scary for me when I was young. So maybe I try to laugh at lack of communication to kind of feel, oh, it's not that important anyway. And my mother, because she was neurotic, she used to get into terrible tantrums. And I think I've often laughed or done stuff that's laughing at anger, but at a particular kind of anger, which is an ineffectual anger. One thinks of how worked up Basil gets. But it's not because he's fundamentally an angry person. It's that he's terrified that Sybil's going to find something out or that a health inspector is going to discover there's a rat in the kitchen. And he gets so frantic to avoid this, it all coming out of fear, that he becomes very frustrated and angry. But it's not effectual anger. It doesn't get him anywhere.
Exactly. What else, besides things that you're afraid of, what else makes you laugh? What do you find funny?
Oh, almost everything. I've always had a very Catholic sense of humor. I can read quite dry, witty stuff or watch comedies of manners, as they call them, and be very entertained. What I notice is the stuff that really makes me howl with laughter, that leaves me weak and helpless and almost joyful with the experience, is something that's more like farce, where the characters become very, very wound up by the circumstances. And as they get more wound up, there's that wonderful phrase from the book Emotional Intelligence. The phrase is, stress makes you stupid. As they get more and more stressed, they make more and more stupid decisions and then get more and more stressed. And I find that that high emotional charge on that kind of humor seems to elicit more laughter from me than quieter, calmer, even possibly more sophisticated humor. So that's why probably I write Fawlty Towers, because they're basically little farces.
Sure. There was an incident that occurred in Washington, D.C. when you were touring with a theatrical review show. I think this would have been in the early 60s.
Yeah, 65.
Yeah, something that you still think about. Can you tell me about that?
We were in Hyde Park on the university campus in Chicago, and we went to a bar afterwards. And this guy came over to read our palms. And when he read my palm, he said, "This is a very unusual palm," he said, "because the creativity and the logic are almost exactly balanced in equal proportions." And that struck me, it stuck in my mind for some reason. I didn't know anything about palmistry, but I thought to myself afterwards, you know, I think that's why I can do comedy quite well, because I can have the ideas, but I also have a reasonable sort of logical, critical mind. So when I've got an idea, I can figure out which are the best bits of that and how I should construct it to get most value out of it.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, do you think this balance of logic and creativity is responsible for you and Graham writing a sketch like the Python classic, The Argument Clinic?
Yes, I think so, because Gray was trained in science. I got into Cambridge on science, although I switched to law, and he was a medic, you see. So both of us had this basic training in what they call the scientific way of thinking, which is to come up with a theory or a hypothesis at that stage and then to test it experimentally. And I think we were more likely to take that slightly intellectual approach to what we were doing than the two Oxford guys who'd read English and history and who were a little more instinctive than we were, which meant that they produced a material, not that it was worse than us, but that it was different from us.
Yeah, Terry Jones and Michael Palin.
That's right. Because when you've got a team, what you want more than anything, Doug, is a mixture of different talents. You don't want everyone to be good at the same things, because then you don't need the team.
You wrote most of your sketches, your Python sketches, with Graham Chapman, and one of the most famous sketches that you two wrote together is The Cheese Shop. Can you tell me how you and Graham came up with that idea?
I was going down to the south coast of England to film something that needed to be shot on a boat. When I got there, the water was already rough, and they said, "Yeah, but we're not going out of the harbour." When I finally got dressed up as one of those Python pepper pots, oh, yes, that's right, Jean-Paul came over for dinner. I was feeling terrible. I was seasick as a dog. And then the director said, "Action," and I came up the steps rapidly and looked into the camera and said, "Oh, yes, one of the..." And I threw up all over the camera, dear, which caused a certain amount of annoyance among the crew. And the car back, with Graham sitting in the back, I remember, he said, "You should eat something." And I thought, yeah, he's probably right. I should put something in my stomach. So he said, "What do you feel like?" I said, "I feel like some cheese." And he said, "All right, well, let's look for somewhere." And we looked for lots of shops, but there weren't many shops. And eventually we went past a drugstore, what we would call a chemist. And I said, "Do you think they'd have any cheese?" And Gray laughed and said, "Well, if they did, it would be medicinal cheese." And we loved the idea of medicinal cheese. So we sat down literally the next day to write about someone going into a drugstore to buy cheese. And we thought, but why would he go into a drugstore? And obviously because he'd been to the cheese store and they didn't have any. So we started to write that, and we never got around to writing the second half of it.
And what is the most popular cheese round here?
Ilchester, sir.
Is it?
Oh, yes, sir. It's staggeringly popular in this manor square.
Is it?
It's our number one bestseller, sir.
I see. Ilchester, eh?
Right, sir.
All right. Okay. "Have you got any?" he asked, expecting the answer no.
"I'll have a look, sir." No.
"It's not much of a cheese shop, is it?"
"Finest in the district, sir."
"Explain the logic underlying that conclusion, okay?"
"Well, it's so clean, sir."
"It's certainly uncontaminated by cheese."
And with the cheese shop sketch, if I recall correctly, you started writing it, and then you didn't think it was funny, and Graham had to tell you.
That's quite right, Doug. I kept losing confidence in it.
Because you were ready to abandon it. So this shows the importance of working in teams and why you like it.
Yes, because Gray just sat there saying, "No, it's funny, it's funny." And what I'd learned earlier on in my career, I was much more dubious about what was funny or whether I was writing something funny. But if Graham laughed, the audience were going to laugh. It was extraordinary. He was just programmed like a tuning fork, and you just had to sort of watch him. And if he was laughing, and you said, "Fine, it's going to be funny." And one of the interesting things about writing the book is that I know now that what I write when I'm trying to be funny will be funny, but I don't know if it's going to be a tiny little bit funny or a lot funny. And that's why I'm asking people about the book, because I think some of it's hilarious. The story about the rabbit on Salisbury Plain, I think, is the funniest thing I've written for 20 years. But the funny thing is, not too many people mention it, and you think, do they think I'm going to be bored if they start talking? So you're seeking the feedback that you would get from a live audience.
Yeah. Maybe time to bring back the live novel writing with Thomas Hardy.
Quite right.
And here he goes, the first word of Thomas Hardy's new novel at 10:35 on this very lovely morning. It's three letters, it's the definite article, and it's the Dennis.
Well, this is true to form. No surprises there. He started 5 of his 11 novels to date with a definite article.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, Dennis, but he's crossed it out. Thomas Hardy here on the first day of his new novel has crossed out the only word he's written so far, and he's gazing off into space.
Is there a question that you've never been asked but have always wanted to be asked? Because if there is, I'd be happy to ask it right now.
No, you've just asked it.
Okay. John... Thank you so very much. It's been a real pleasure and an honor to talk to you. I can now die a happy man.
Yes, this moment will flash before your eyes when you lie there on your deathbed. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you, John. Pleasure. And congratulations.
Thanks.
Again on the book. It is indeed hilarious.
I'm so glad you thought it was funny.
It's very funny.
That's like hearing an audience laugh. Thanks.
John Cleese is a comedy legend and author of the new memoir called So Anyway. He talked with Doug Gordon. And that's it for this hour. To the Best of Our Knowledge is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio by Sarah Nix, Doug Gordon, Raymond Tungekar, Charles Monroe Kane, and Craig Ely. Opening theme music by Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer. And I'm Ann Strainchamps. Till next time.